Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. What is the liberal world order? Is it some kind of value we're supposed to believe in? Who benefits from the liberal order? And are you willing to sacrifice for such an order? Have you ever been asked to vote for the liberal order? It would seem the liberal order is an ideology of the elites, by the elites, for the elites. Crosstalking the liberal order, I'm joined by my guest, Matthew Arrett, in Montreal. He's a senior fellow at the American University in Moscow and director of Rising Tide Foundation of Canada. In Chicago, we have Caleb Maupin. He is a journalist and political analyst. And in Brittany, we have Jean Bricmont. He is a political commentator. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Caleb, let me go to you first in Chicago. What do you understand by the term liberal order? And considering your understanding of it, are you willing to sacrifice for it? Go right ahead.
Well, they have a lot of different euphemisms they use. They talk about the rules-based global order. They talk about the open international system. I think that's how Anne-Marie Slaughter, one of the ideologues of the Hillary Clinton State Department, put it. But essentially what they're referring to is a global financial system, free trade, neoliberalism, the domination of the world by a few banks and corporations based on Wall Street and in London. And that is really what exists and what they are defending in their wars around the planet. Lenin called it imperialism, the highest stage of capitalism. Capitalism in its monopoly stage, where a few banks and corporations keep themselves wealthy by making the world poor, holding back economic development. And I think that's really what the issue here is. I mean, you'll recall that back in the 1990s, when Boris Yeltsin was wrecking the economy of Russia and Russia was impoverished, the USA loved the Russian government. Well, when Russia restored its economic strength, when Putin came in and built up Gazprom and Rosneft as state-run energy corporations, rebooted the Russian economy, suddenly we started hearing about how Russia is a threat, Russia is a problem, Russia is a threat to this so-called liberal order. You know, when China was the sick man of Asia, they had no problem with it. But now China is building up and building better cell phones than the United States, and American manufacturers exporting more steel. And so suddenly, now that China is a competitor, they're a threat to this so-called liberal order. And I mean, this is really the domination of the world by banks and corporations done in the name of this open international system, liberal order, open society, as George Soros refers to it. That's what we're dealing with here.
Okay, let's go to Matthew in Montreal. Caleb obviously comes from the left, the progressive left. He's a good friend of mine and a good friend of the program. But Matthew, you're not of the man of the left. Neither am I. How do you understand the liberal order? Go ahead.
Well, I think that Caleb did an excellent job.
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, to add to that, I think that one of the things that strikes me about the liberal world order is that it is rooted in a concept of Anglo-Dutch liberalism philosophically. And there's this sort of idea that all opinions are accepted, except, of course, those opinions which challenge the governing class. Those are not. But overall, everything is accepted. And that's why Britain was known, even in the 19th century, as a zone of supporting international terror outfits. I mean, many of the assassinations that began in the late 19th century were unleashed by various terror cells, anarchist groups that were cultivated from the things like the London Conference in 1871 that provided a home, safe basing operations for the assassination of various statesmen all around the world. And the idea was always, you know, that if you have a problem with various anarchist groups in your country, that's your country's problem. We accept everybody. And even today, you have things like Londonistan is a famous term given to London, and various leaders over the past 30 years from various countries around the world have written open complaints to Britain for hosting headquarters of various international terrorist networks and groups that have conducted various destabilizing efforts in all sorts of countries, from Egypt and Nigeria and Pakistan and beyond. So I think, again, you have a masquerade of a pretense towards acceptance and accepting all opinions, you know, as being equal. And again, except the dominant opinion, that which has the claim to truth, is that which is wielded by those who have the power to impose their opinions onto the weak. And
that's my point, and that's the point I tried to make in my introduction, because this is all about elites, okay? As long as they don't sacrifice, as long as they don't suffer. Let's go to Jean in Brittany. I mean, you know, are you willing to pay much higher gas prices, energy prices for an ideology that doesn't necessarily, and I would certainly say doesn't represent you? Go ahead.
Yes, but let me make a more general remark about liberalism. You see, there's a big difference between ideologies when they are not in power and where they are in power, whether it be communism or Islam in Iran, etc. And as it's also true for liberalism. There are three characteristics of classical liberalism which present-day liberals or people who claim to be liberals don't defend. The first one is freedom of speech.
Yep.
That was a big thing among classical liberals, but now it's pretty obvious that they try to suppress. I don't have to explain it to RT, which has been canceled in Europe, and there's all the cancel culture, and I've been canceled and other people. So freedom of speech, in effect, is gone. And of course, the most extreme case being Assange. The second thing is rationality. The liberals praise themselves as not being in the grip of an ideology like communism, fascism, or religion, etc. But in fact, when you see, for example, the sanctions against Russia, how could anybody with any sense of reality think that they could work? Sanctions have never worked against Cuba, Venezuela, Iran, and all kinds of other countries. And why would they work on a country which is so well connected to the rest of the world and which is so self-sufficient as Russia? You would have to be completely in the grip of an ideology to believe that that works. And the third characteristic of liberalism that doesn't hold once they are in power is representative democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, representative democracy supposes that there is sovereignty of the people, sovereignty of a nation, and that's exactly what they don't want in the so-called liberal order, where they want to impose what their version of liberalism, which I just explained, has very little to do with classical liberalism, to every country in the world. And of course, you know, that's what they don't accept, and they don't accept it for the people of the Donbass. I mean, the fact also that they never wanted to negotiate, and they still don't want to negotiate with the people of the Donbass, who obviously want to be either Russians or at the very least independent of Ukraine, this is something which we, is completely irrational and totally contradictory with liberal principles. So I think, we get confused by the fact that present-day liberals repeat, and we've seen it with the 4th of July celebration yesterday, they repeat slogans going back to the 17th and the 18th century, which they have no intention whatsoever of applying to themselves.
Well, Caleb, let me go back to you in Chicago. I mean, I think it's fair to say, and I'm glad that Jean brought up cancel culture, and I'll mention wokeism and things like that. It's very totalitarian right now. I mean, it has a very narrow acceptance of other ideas because other ideas are morally unacceptable. They're not, you know, they're not misjudged or misplaced. They're morally wrong, and they bring in a moral dimension to this here. And that's what makes it very totalitarian, because you can't negotiate with a totalitarian. Caleb, go ahead in Washington.
Sure. Well, I mean, the dirty little secret of liberalism is that it's always propped up by illiberalism. You can't have a liberal society without a lot of illiberal institutions propping it up. The Azov Battalion are not a group of liberals. And the Contras in Central America that were backed by the United States against the Sandinistas, they were not liberals. The Falun Gong religious cult that is one of the main anti-China entities in the United States, attacking China with their Epoch Times, they are not a liberal organization. You read what they say about homosexuals and other kind of people. I mean, they're a very vicious group. And you go down the line. I mean, throughout the world, the United States arms, trains, props up all kinds of fanatical, illiberal organizations to do their dirty work to spread and defend this so-called liberal order. And I mean, this applies even domestically within the United States. I mean, you know, go back to the 1980s, you wouldn't have had the prosperous suburbs throughout the United States if you didn't have, you know, a prison industrial complex and a rise of police brutality in the urban centers against the African-American community. And everywhere you see this liberal order existing, the dirty little secret is that behind closed doors, there are heavy illiberal institutions backing it up with brute force. And what's going on with Julian Assange is a great example of that right now. And the rise of cancel culture is also a reality of it. They don't really believe in this liberal stuff they espouse. They like to have the veneer of that based on the prosperity that exists in certain stratums of their global financial empire. But at the end of the day, they want to maintain their power, and that may require them to collapse into a fully illiberal system. And that was what the Second World War was all about. Fascism was the collapse of liberalism into illiberalism to save itself.
You know, Matthew, I mean, are you willing to sacrifice for this ideology? Because that's what the current administration is saying. And I think that, you know, looking at the G7 that met just recently, they're saying the same thing. Suck it up. You have to pick up the tab for our comfort and our and the maintenance of our power. That's exactly what they're saying. They're not hiding it anymore. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, it's completely devoid of substance. And I mean, people are willing to sacrifice for a lot, their cultures, their civilization, their nations, their families. I mean, if you give people a reason to sacrifice, they will go above and beyond. But there is a complete shallowness and hollowness to the neoliberal ethic. And the fact that you have people like Brian Deese or Jens Stoltenberg saying that we have to be prepared to suffer to pay indefinitely high gas prices and food prices when people are already living in the red, they're living underwater, they're suffering. And you're giving them nothing. You're demonstrating
but
that there's
Matthew,
nothing.
But Matthew, let me ask you a real quick question before we go to the break. Do you think these people that tell us that we all have to sacrifice, do you think they know what a liter of gasoline costs? Do you think they know what a loaf of bread costs? Do you think they have any idea what the average wage is of a working people? Do you think they have any clue of that at all? Go ahead, real quick.
No, they're all ivory tower. They've lived privileged silver spoon lives. They have no clue about any of these, and they don't care. Even if they did have a conceptual idea, it doesn't matter because their hearts are so detached from their logic that they couldn't possibly act accordingly with that knowledge.
And that's because they're better than us, and they know better than us. That's why they have this attitude here. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here, and we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the liberal order. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the liberal order. Okay, let's go back to Jean in Brittany. I find it really curious. All of this is being said in the name of Ukraine. And you can have your own opinion on the conflict, and I've done... I think this is the first program I haven't done on it since the military operation started on February 24th. But, you know, we had the G7, we had NATO meeting, and then we have Joe Biden, as long as it takes, okay? And obviously that's in reference to Ukraine. Sheldon, I mean, what I find very more curious than ever is that the regime in Kyiv is not liberal at all, okay? And it bans opposition parties. Its main opposition leader is under house arrest facing charges. The media sphere has been completely collapsed under central control. All of the television stations have been collapsed into that. There's one message, only one message at all. No dissent is allowed. And this is what the Europeans and North Americans, and don't even mention the global South, has to pay for this type of regime that we're going to be supporting as long as it takes. Go ahead, your response.
Yes, but you see, how did it start? It started in 2013 with the proposal of a free trade zone between Ukraine and the European Union, and the Russians say, well, wait a minute. We have a free trade with Ukraine, but we don't want one with the European Union, so we should discuss. And then European Union say, no, we don't discuss. And then Yanukovych said, well, wait a minute, I want to think. Then the Americans organized the Maidan and so on and so on. What is interesting in this sequence of events, and then it went on, and they armed Ukraine, and there was a war in the East, and now we go to the special military operation. And at no point At no point in this whole story was there any discussion, even an article in a newspaper or a debate in a parliament in any of the European countries, which are now suffering enormously. You say, are you willing to suffer? Well, nobody's asking me. I mean, if I want gas, I have to pay whatever price there is. I mean, there's no choice whatsoever. There's no discussion. It's a religious cult. We say, oh, we have to defend Ukraine. Why? And why? I mean, what does it mean, defend Ukraine? It means no negotiation with the separatists. I mean, we have been bombing Yugoslavia, both in, well, first in, you know, in Bosnia and then in Serbia, for self-determination of various people like the Kosovo, Albanians, etc. But any self-determination of the people in the Donbass is verboten. Well, it doesn't make any sense, but there's no discussion. No discussion. I mean, because you say the opposition parties are banned, but here they are not banned, but there are no opposition parties about these issues. I mean, everybody agrees on that. So it's a totalitarian system, but it's a soft totalitarian system. But the reason it's soft is because there is so little opposition. When it's a real opposition like Assange, well, he goes in jail, like in totalitarian societies.
You know, Caleb, the more and more I look at it, looking at Western coverage of the conflict in Ukraine, in my mind, it's very much a deflection for the liberal order to get its way, to the Green New Deal, irrespective of how you might feel about it. People are not voting on it, okay? People don't vote on these things. The liberal world order doesn't trust democracy. It doesn't trust voters. And so it's very interesting how there's an agenda, Davos agenda, and then you have the conflict in Ukraine. They dovetail really well together because, you know, if you don't support the Ukrainians, you're somehow immoral, you're a totalitarian, and all of these other bad things that they'll call you. I mean, it does dovetail really good together. Right after COVID, by the way, that was very totalitarian in itself. Go ahead, Caleb.
Sure. Well, right now, we're seeing very much a power grab by the big monopolies. You know, Jeff Bezos and Amazon, the Walton family and Walmart, the big four super major oil companies, they are trying to grab control of the markets and just drive out any competitors. And the domestic U.S. economy, the same thing is happening in Western Europe. And the pandemic was a perfect storm for them. And these are the liberals. These are the ones that are in with Joe Biden. It's that old Cold War Eastern establishment, the Anglo-American establishment. Then they saw the pandemic as a great opportunity to just demolish their opposition. There was kind of an uprising against them from lower levels of capital, the fracking companies, Betsy DeVos and Blackwater military contractors. Those folks were in with Trump, and the pandemic allowed them to just demolish their competitors, Hobby Lobby, big Trump supporter company, they shut down. And so now they're trying to prolong this. And the rise in oil prices and the huge gas prices that we're dealing with here in the United States, it costs like $87 to fill up your gas tank in the United States. I mean, just ridiculous. This is a way to ensure that monopoly and just make sure that that lower level of capital that is the opposition, it's Trump in the United States, it's the new right in Europe, it's the Brexit people, that they are just economically demolished and that they don't have the financial capability to challenge the big dogs on the global open international market. And I think that's what's going on here. And in order to pull this off, they need the government to be involved. These folks preach free markets at us, et cetera, but they need the government to help secure their power grab and kind of put these lower levels of capital out of business. And I think that's what's interesting about, you know, you hear a lot of these libertarian folks, they are libertarian because they see that the state is heavily involved in securing the monopoly for the big dogs.
You know, Matthew, again, you know, where do average working people fall in this here? Because they're the ones that pay. See, the way I look at it, just very bad decision making. And when things go wrong, well, everybody else picks up the tab. And Caleb's absolutely right. We have, you know, we have socialism for the rich and capitalism for everybody else. OK, I mean, it just seems like an unfair playing field. And I don't see what kind of power people have anymore under this system here. It's bankrupting people, growth is going down, but it's still somehow you have to be morally behind this because it's for democracy, it's against autocracies. I mean, this is they're playing word salad with us. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, they most certainly are. And I think that there's a deep misanthropy underlying this so-called liberalism. When you listen to the remarks of people like Noah Yuval Harari, one of the gurus, the philosophical gurus trotted out by the World Economic Forum crowd and promoted as an ideologue, a guru of what this, you know, great post-Great Reset age, the great narrative is going to look like. He speaks a lot about the global, this new useless class that he perceives as being an inevitable consequence of the fourth industrial revolution and the type of social and economic changes they wish to bring about in the global order, using the excuse of the current oncoming, or the not even oncoming, the current financial collapse of the transatlantic system now underway. So they don't see a role for many of the people, I would say the majority of the people living on the planet today, they don't see a role for them in the type of ivory tower order, the technocratic feudal order that they want to bring into being as a means to an end. And another thing is that the overall system, this bubble that is blowing up, didn't happen because of COVID or something like that. It happened because of coup d'etats, that I think of it, that happened in the late 60s with the murders of JFK, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and the transformation of a once viable industrial economic system into a post-industrial speculative basket case driven by myopia and money worship in the early 70s when the dollar was disassociated with the fixed exchange rate gold system. And since then, it's been 50 years of atrophy of our infrastructure, outsourcing of our heavy industry, an inability to sustain the lives of people, and a giant bubble upon bubble of unpayable debts that is waiting to default and take the whole thing down. So I think of it as a time bomb, not a banking system, which is collapsing. And that time bomb was set to create the effects of chaos, like in 1923 Weimar. And I think if you recognize that, you can act and mitigate that in a way that allows the too big to fail banks to not be the welfare recipients as they are today, but instead take the hits, they can suffer, and we can protect the viable part of the real economies of the West. But that requires leadership, and I don't see a lot of that now.
Well, Matthew, at the same time, too, very high inflation is very beneficial for the very, very rich because they can pay off their debts, okay, with a devalued currency. Mm. It works very well for them, okay? Sean, let me go back to you. I mean, when, you know, I'm an American, I've been living in Russia a long time, and I used to be an academic historian in the United States. And, you know, Europe, for me, in the post-war era was, you know, defined by democracy, by prosperity, and by security. It seems that Europe is losing all three of them very, very quickly because of neoliberalism. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, yes. But also the crazy policy of sanctions against Russia has this effect. I mean, Germany is now having trade deficits.
First time in 30 years, a trade deficit. Keep going.
But you see, the world is changing very rapidly with this war, because the most remarkable thing is that even though most countries in the world condemn Russian intervention, they couldn't do less than that, because, of course, that was a violation of international law. And though most countries defend international law, they did not apply sanctions. In fact, they benefit from the trade. They buy more raw materials. India buy more raw materials from Russia, China does too. So nobody cares about these Western sanctions. And I think this is really the end, if you wish, of liberalism, the crisis of liberalism, neoliberalism, where the West has decided that they can print money. That was a remark of Putin in St. Petersburg, that the West prints money, the Fed and the European Central Bank, and then they use that money to buy goods in the used to be called the third world, in the rest of the world. But of course, this is a complete scam because you can't buy these things, anything with this printed money, except temporarily, as long as people trust the dollar, etc. But this is going to come to an end, and I think the shock will be devastating.
One more minute, Caleb, I'll let you finish it off here. But I think Jean brings up a really good point, you know, why the global South is not on board with the West when it comes to Ukraine, because neoliberalism just isn't an attractive model for them. And, you know, and they're not afraid of the West anymore, because you know what? The global South has power and it's growing. Go ahead. 1 minute to you. Go ahead.
Well, the defining belief of this liberal order is that growth must end. They believe that there's just too many people in the world, living standards are rising too much, and because of climate change or whatever other excuses they want to give, growth must end. But people around the world are saying, we want to grow, we want our economies to get stronger, we want to team up with Russia and China, the Belt and Road Initiative, the Eurasian Economic Union. We want growth, we're going to have more than we had before, we're going to have a better life for our kids. And that is ultimately the real threat to the liberal order, is that human beings continue to grow and expand and invent new technology and raise people out of poverty. That's what the liberal order is really afraid of. The world is not going to stop so they can stay on top.
Very well said. Thank you. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Montreal, Chicago, and in Brittany. And I want to thank my viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.